Going to continue the hour by talking about public opinion polling. We're joined on the phone by Tom Jensen, the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh, publicpolicypolling.com, their website. Find more numbers and analysis on Twitter at PPP Polls as well. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
And we were talking earlier this afternoon before we started the show to talk about what our discussion was going to entail today. And Tom, you had to remind me that it still has been less than a week since we learned about the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it feels like it's been 2 weeks or more. Just the way that this year has gone, it's kind of standard way that we experience time these days. But we haven't spoken since then, and obviously this is something that I don't know if it's going to change the dynamic of the 2020 election, but it's certainly going to change the tenor of the conversation around it. So what do we know just from the last 6 days about people's thoughts about Ginsburg, thoughts about filling the seat, the process of filling the seat, and how all of this might shape the upcoming election?
Well, people are saying by a pretty strong margin that they think the winner of the election should fill the seat instead of Trump just going ahead and filling it now. There have been a number of national polls on the issue, and the margins vary some, but it's generally by about a 10 to 20 point margin that voters are saying that appointment should be left to whoever wins the election. And, you know, it basically is a proxy for Trump's approval, you know, with maybe four more points worth of people who do like Trump still saying that the winner of the election should get to make it out of fairness. But there was no chance that this was going to be an issue that we would see skew really strongly in one direction or the other. Because like everything over the last 4 years, it just pretty much goes through the lens of if you like Trump, you think he should get to go ahead and fill it. If you don't like Trump, you don't think he should get to go ahead and fill it. And in addition to asking the general question of whether the winner of the election should get to fill the seat or not, there's also been polling asking people specifically, do you think Biden or Trump is more equipped to make this appointment? And Biden wins that by about 10 points, just like he's winning the election by about 10 points. I don't think there's a lot of separation on that question from who people are planning to vote for.
In terms of how this is affecting people's voting behavior and campaigning behavior, is this galvanizing one side more than the other, or is it galvanizing both sides about equally?
It actually is getting Democrats a little bit more fired up than it's getting Republicans fired up, which is a reversal of 2016 when Republicans were very fired up about the Supreme Court and Democrats weren't really. And that may in both cases be a reflection of who passed away. Mm-hmm. In 2016, Republicans were fired up because they really didn't want to see a Democratic-leaning judge replace Scalia. And now liberals are in the position where they really don't want a conservative-leaning judge replacing Ginsburg. So I think that sort of helps to explain why Democrats are maybe a little bit more fired up about it this time around. One thing that's going to be a big question, though, is in the Senate races that Democrats are trying to win in states that are particularly red. I'll be interested to see if this hurts their chances or if it ends up just not making a difference one way or the other. You think about some of the sort of next tier Senate races Democrats are trying to win to get more than just 50 seats. You're talking about places like Montana that voted for Trump by 20. You're talking about places like Iowa that voted for Trump by 9. You're talking about places like Kansas that voted for Trump by 20. So that is one electoral impact. I'm not saying it will have, but it could have, is to make Republican-leaning voters in those states less willing to vote for a Democrat for the Senate, which might have been the case anyway.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, public policy polling. So I can see this going either way. If I'm a Republican voter looking ahead to this, if they're able to nominate someone and fill the seat and get a confirmation before November, I might be super excited about that and wanted to go out and reward them with my vote if I was on the fence before. On the other hand, if I really care about the Supreme Court and they do that, then that means that that seat is going to be filled for the next 4 years. And it doesn't, you know, there's no clear indication that any more seats are going to open up in the next 4 years. So if the Supreme Court is a really, really big issue for me when I'm going to vote in 2020, if they're able to fill the seat, it might be less of an issue by the time November 3rd rolls around. So I could see a Republican going either way. But is there any indication on Republicans going one way or the other on that?
Not really. You know, I think ultimately the bottom line is we were already going to have record voter turnout in this election. Mm-hmm. People could not have been more fired up than they already were. And people also couldn't have been more locked in than they already were. You know, there's just nothing that's going to make people change their answers. We may have talked about this last week, but we did a set of polling in some state legislative districts where we didn't just ask people who they were going to vote for, but we asked people, are you going to definitely vote for Biden, probably vote for Biden, definitely vote for Trump, probably vote for Trump? Only 4% of people said either probably Biden or probably Trump, in addition to 5% undecided. The other 90%+ said they were definitely voting for Biden or Trump. So people just are not open to changing their minds. And we've done, somebody asked me, have you done any polls since the Ginsburg thing yesterday? Yes, we've done about 100 polls since the Ginsburg thing. And what we find is a race that's very consistent with where it was before this. And actually seeing some signs in state legislative polling that we're doing in the Midwest that the firewall that wasn't for Biden and for Clinton in 2016 might actually be for Biden in 2020. We're consistently finding when we go into legislative districts in places like Michigan and Minnesota and Pennsylvania that Biden's outrunning Clinton's performance in those districts by about 8 points.
Speaking again with Tom Jensen, and as we wrap up, with that in mind, and I know we've kind of had this conversation or different iterations of this conversation in the last couple of weeks where just battle lines have hardened and people are locked into their positions, so we're not really seeing a whole lot of significant movement in the polls one way or the other, and that's in spite of or because of the fact that a lot of things are happening in 2020. With all of that in mind, for people who are following the polls or trying to get a sense of what might happen in November, are there things that they should be looking at more closely than others? Are there things that you're watching, or states or demographics or something like that, that you're watching closely to see if there is movement?
Well, I think one thing that's sort of interesting to look at is there's so much talk about how much the suburbs have moved towards Democrats in recent election cycles. But a big part of why we're seeing the Midwest looking so good for Biden this time around is that he's not doing nearly as badly with less well-educated white voters and voters in more rural areas as Clinton did. Biden might not get back to Obama's numbers with those groups of voters, but he's not going to lose them by the same kinds of margins that Clinton did. What that means is there's going to be a lot of counties, especially in the Midwest, that Biden's going to lose 65-35. And that might not sound very good for Biden to lose a county 65-35. But those are places that Clinton lost 70-30 in more rural parts of the Midwest. And if Biden's consistently in places where Clinton lost by 40, only losing by 30, that's a pretty good path to winning those key Midwestern states when those states were effectively ties, but pro-Trump ties in 2016. It doesn't take much to flip them back into the Democratic column, and that's going to be a big part of it. You know, like in our home state of Michigan, Biden certainly is going to put up amazing numbers in Oakland County and will probably do the best a Democratic candidate has done in Oakland County in a really long time. But really, a big part of why he's going to win is not getting completely wiped out in smaller counties across the state.
And then finally, just any update on the key races in North Carolina, the presidential race, the gubernatorial race, the Senate race?
Well, it's really sort of amazing how consistent the polling is in all of those races. You know, sometimes we'll say, oh, the polling's all over the place, but it's not really the case in North Carolina. There's a strong consensus that the presidential race is close.
Mm-hmm.
Most polls have Biden up by a little bit, and that includes us. I think if the election was today, Biden would probably win by a couple points. And one thing that's interesting about North Carolina is we have more votes in the bank here than anywhere else in the country because the mail ballots went out so early and people are returning them so quickly. Joe Biden currently has a very large lead percentage-wise in North Carolina, given what we know about the people who have returned their ballots. And, you know, it's really sort of an interesting situation where if Biden does win North Carolina, it's probably going to turn out that he lost October and November votes in North Carolina, but he won September by so much that Trump winning the combined October and November votes wasn't enough to make it up. I think that'll be a first in North Carolina history, maybe a first in anywhere history for somebody to win a swing state based solely on the margin that they put up in September. But there's a good chance that's going to happen for Biden. Senate race, Cunningham still up by about 5 points. That's actually somewhere where the Supreme Court issue is going to be interesting because we've talked repeatedly about how Tillis's big problem is that Republicans aren't very enthusiastic about him. And obviously he's fully embraced Trump's approach and wanting to fill this vacancy. So it'll be interesting to see if that helps Tillis make up any of his problem with Republican voters where he just isn't getting the same level of support from the party base that Trump is. And then the governor's race, typical picture, Cooper's up by 7-10. I don't think that anybody thinks that that's going to end up being a particularly competitive race at this point. I think Cooper was going to get reelected even at the start of the year, but he's perceived to have handled the virus very well. And I think that took Danforth's chances from difficult to close to zero.
publicpolicypolling.com for more info and more numbers and find more analysis as well on Twitter at PPP Polls. As always, Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.